I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
My baby's just woken up. This is Uncle Dan.
Hello, Xander. He's not crying yet.
This is Uncle Dan.
He's looking at me slightly petrified, to be honest, Karen.
No, he's just woken up.
Who is the strange man?
Don't mind, I'll just keep him here.
Yeah, no, let's do it.
Let's do it.
Hello, welcome to the Dan Wootton Interview. This is the podcast that brings some of the biggest names from around the world straight to your headphones. And this week, we welcome a Welsh classical soprano singer-songwriter who over the last 15 years, believe it or not, has crossed over a spectrum of musical genres, including opera, pop, and of course, musical theatre. So she first emerged in 2003 when she sang at Westminster Cathedral for Pope John Paul II's Silver Jubilee. And since then has obviously become one of our most well-known faces, winning a Classic Brit Award for Album of the Year, appearing as a judge on Pop Star to Opera Star on ITV, and on the US TV series Dancing with the Stars, finishing runner-up. Of course, I am talking about Catherine Jenkins, who's had a very busy year giving birth to her son, Xander. Much more on that in just a moment. And of course, releasing her brand new album, Guiding Light. Now, remember, before we kick off, we've got loads more amazing stars, including the Spice Girls, Jason Derulo, and Anne-Marie. That is in our back catalogue. So make sure that you subscribe and listen back to those. But right now, it is time to go in-depth and personal. Here's Catherine Jenkins. And Catherine, I mentioned Xander just then, and I have to paint the picture here because he's in your arms.
He is. He's sitting here like a good boy, and I thought I would bring him in to say hello to you,
okay. Yes, it's amazing. This is the first time we've actually had a baby as part of the podcast.
Really?
So I love it.
Oh, there we
and
go. Isn't that
Xander,
an honour, Xander?
You are more than welcome to chip in if you have anything to say, okay? If you want to just yell out if you disagree with Mum. But this is an incredible return to work, Catherine, because he is only 4 months now?
No, he's actually 7 months.
Seven months?
Yes, he was 2 months when I started in the studio.
I see.
And what was great, because when they're this age, they're so portable, and you can put them in the car seat and take them with you. And so he would come in the studio with me every time, and I would sing to him. And I don't know, it's always lovely having a baby around. It's sort of, you know, I feel quite selfishly that I then get to spend as much time with him as I can.
And you actually wrote a song on this album for Xander, which was a big deal for you, wasn't it?
It wasn't intentional. We'd nearly finished with the album, and I was feeding him, and he'd fallen asleep in my arms. And I just wrote this lullaby prayer for his life, just the same things that I suppose any mum wishes for their child. And I played it to my producer, and he was like, actually, we have to include this on the album. So we fitted it in right at the end. So he gets his own song, which I'm sure when he's 18, he'll be mortified about. He'll be so embarrassed about it, but it's nice right now to include it.
At some point in his life, though, he will also love it.
I hope so.
And it is a beautiful album, an absolutely beautiful album. It spans a lot of different genres, as you often do, but my two highlights are your versions of Peace in the Valley, which is obviously such a stunning song, sort of, which I have to admit I'd never heard, but made famous by Elvis Presley.
Yeah, and so many people have covered it since. But I knew that I wanted to record it and I wanted to do something really different with it. So actually, it's completely unaccompanied, just with a fantastic choir of young people called the Rodolphus Choir. And we sort of did it in quite a spiritual way. It's my favourite one. It's the last one on the album, but it's my favourite one.
It's absolutely stunning song. It's beautiful.
Thank you.
And then, of course, as well, you have covered one of the songs of the year. Also, Catherine, one of the hardest songs, I think, in the world ever for most people to sing, by all accounts, which is, of course, Never Enough from The Greatest Showman.
Yeah.
But as an opera singer, is it actually quite easy?
It's not an easy song to sing, no. And the reason I recorded it was when I came back after having Xander. I'd seen the film and I knew I wanted to sing the song at some point. And then I got invited to sing it at the Classic Brits at the Royal Albert Hall. And I was standing there with, you know, seven weeks after he was born. And there was a moment in my head where I thought, what are you doing? What are you doing? You're singing this song. It's such a massive song. You've just had a baby. It really became a favourite of mine and I knew I wanted to record it. And it's the song that I sing to my daughter when she goes to bed every night. So she says to me, Mummy, sing me that song. So I do a much quieter version of it.
And it was a significant moment that night for you, wasn't it? Because it did mark your return to work. And of course, any new mum will tell you that it's tough.
Yeah.
It's really tough because how do you balance those two things in your life? And also, when is the right time? Because for everyone, it's very different. You know, some people go back to work after 6 months. Some people it takes 6 weeks. Other people it takes 6 years.
Yeah, I've always felt really inspired by them in that I wanted to, you know, get out and show my daughter really that, you know, mummy's passionate about something and goes to work and is dedicated. And so when I got the invitation, I thought, I really want to continue to share my music with my children and to have them see me perform. So it was something really special to do.
So, Catherine, each week I ask my guests about the 5 songs that mean the most to them. So it could be a song that maybe inspired you to write and play music, or one that brings back special memories, or a song that you'd love to cover. So recently we've had Anne-Marie. She chose Alanis Morissette because she used to sing her songs at talent shows when she was younger. And Jason Derulo, he actually chose Michael Jackson and Justin Timberlake, as they have both inspired him throughout his career. So, Catherine, let's get your 5 tracks and why they mean so much to you. So what is your first choice?
Oh, I love things like this. My first one would be Madonna, Material Girl.
It
was the first song that I don't even know if I bought it, but it was the first song that I, you know, was singing that I was aware of pop music. And I think it was also that I was inspired by the video because it was so Marilyn Monroe, it was so glamorous. And I think I was only about 4, but I just remember thinking, oh, this is like, she's gorgeous, and I love the song. And so my daughter's having that moment now with the Jess Glynn song.
Yes.
And so seeing her have that thing where she, oh, I love this one. And that would be mine, Material Girl.
Great choice. Song 2.
So the Jenkinses love A Family Party, and whenever we all get together, if this song comes on, which we always request it, it's sort of like a call to arms to everybody to get to the dance floor and dance together, and it's Sister Sledge, We Are Family.
Great song. Song 3.
Tom Odell, Grow Old With Me, was the song that Andrew and I chose as our first dance at our wedding.
Does Tom know that?
No, I don't think so.
Do you know him at all?
No, I don't. I've never met him.
He was on the podcast very recently, actually. Lovely guy. So you're going to have to go back and listen.
Yeah, he seems lovely. And I love the sentiment of the song. You know, it's sort of, you know, it's the idea that doesn't really matter what else is going, you know, whatever you go through in life, but just all I want to do is grow old with you. And that was an easy choice for us. We didn't have to think about it too much.
He is a very talented man. And in fact, you've got to listen to his new album. It's
okay.
So good. So many brilliant songs on it.
Grow old with me, let us share what we see, and all the best it could be, just you and I.
Song 4.
Billy Joel, She's Got Away. Now, my husband is a New Yorker, as you know, and Tom Jones to me is Billy Joel to New Yorkers. And my daughter was born to She's Got Away. So it's something that whenever...
Really?
Yeah. And so whenever I hear that now, I really tear up.
And was that on purpose?
No, it just happened. I had a playlist, and that's the one that but she came into the world screaming her lungs out.
So more and more I am understanding now, because quite a few people on the Five this year have chosen songs for when their partner or themselves gave birth. So John Legend, he chose Here Comes the Sun.
Oh,
because
really?
That was the song that was playing while his son was delivered. So it's a very good choice, because it's particularly memorable in your life.
Yeah. She's got a way of pleasing. I don't know why it is, but there doesn't have to be a reason anyway.
What song completes your five?
My last choice would be Judy Garland, Somewhere Over the Rainbow. It's a song that I sing, but for me it was just so emotional and so many memories. I sang it for the first time when I was going out to the forces, and I was in Iraq. We were doing a concert to 4,000 men and women in literally in a war zone, and I didn't know how they were going to react to my music. So when I started singing, and they got to the chorus, it was Christmas Eve, and they all sang it back with me. And so that song will never be the same for me. It's like a lump in the throat song.
And she's amazing, obviously.
She massively inspired me.
Yeah, I've been listening back to her quite a lot recently.
Have you?
I went back to watch A Star Is Born, obviously,
right.
Because she did not the original, but the second
original
version of it.
Yeah.
And it is amazing just how her voice in so many ways totally stands the test of time. She was so unique.
So unique and so, sort of so emotional in her performances. My favourite is The Man That Got Away. That one is, that's such a great performance of hers.
Well, look, what an incredible eclectic mix of songs in your five. I love it.
Thank you.
Somewhere over the rainbow, way up high, there's a land that I heard of once in a lullaby.
Oh, Xander, we're going to put Xander down to sleep. He is very, very cute. I have to say, what an adorable baby, Catherine.
Thank you. So, I am obsessed.
Well, yeah, and it must be hard to leave him.
It is, and I think that's why I try and take him as much as possible. But
yeah.
And also why I'm not doing so many international tours.
Yeah.
Just until the children are a bit bigger. So, so I can be mummy at home.
Of course, and it has changed you, hasn't it? You do say that actually your priorities since becoming a mum, because Aaliyah is, what, three now?
She's three, yeah.
Totally changed.
Obviously they come first and the family, but I think it's also just made me a lot more chilled, which I know sounds sort of the opposite of what should happen, because you are more tired and more hectic and everything, but I don't know, it's just made me more patient, more understanding, having more compassion for other people. So I think it's made me a better version of myself.
Well, having known you for so many years now, you know, you are a grafter, you are a worker, you know, you were ambitious, you put the hours in, and I think you'd probably be the first to admit for a period you didn't really stop, you know?
Yeah, I didn't. And I think that there was a time definitely around sort of 2010, 2011, I was on a plane every single day. I was going all over the place and it was full on. And I think it's just you meet the right person and your priorities go, actually, this is what I want to do now. And I feel very fortunate that I can also sing and I can also go to work. I feel like it's a gift to have these kids.
So would you say you've put work into some type of perspective?
Yeah, I think what it's made me do is prioritise the things that I have to do. So,
well, what's great, by the way, is that Xander is playing here. You know, so if you hear any noise or anything, that is because he's here. He's in the room and I love that.
I think what it makes you do is it makes you go, actually, if it has to be really good to take me away from the family.
Yeah.
So I'm not doing things that are questionable. I'm doing things that I either feel really passionate about that I want to do, or I'm not going to do it. And so it makes me just streamline everything and the grey areas don't exist anymore.
I know recently, and I wonder if you've made your decision, you were very, very torn over whether you would go back and perform in war zones? Because obviously this was something that was such a big part of your career. Your connection to the troops is obviously something that was a big part of your career, but also your life, wasn't it? How much you cared passionately about doing that. But as a mum, is it something that you are prepared to do again?
It is something I feel really strongly about doing, because I'm still a trustee of the British Forces Foundation. And actually, just last night, I was doing a concert for the Welsh Guards, because they've just returned from 7 months in Afghanistan. So it was nice to do a sort of welcome home concert for them. Something I really want to continue to do and will always make sure that I do. But I have had two invitations to go to quite scary places. And the selfish part of me is like, yes, I absolutely want to go. But, you know, the children are really small and it is dangerous. At the same time, I look at the other mums and dads that are out there and think, well, they're putting their lives on the line, you know, for months at a time. So, yeah, it's a little bit of a something that needs a lot more thought, I think, right now. But I want to do it.
But for the moment, probably not, because you need to be
Well, these things are in the first part of next year, so I'm still deciding. I haven't had to give an answer yet.
And what does your husband think about that?
He's so proud of the times that I've already gone, and he knows that I'm headstrong. And actually, this one is more heartstrong. I really just want to go because I know the difference it makes, and I really love our military families. And so he knows that once I've made my decision, I can't be talked out of it. But he also agrees with me that it's... we have to think about the family. So we're going to discuss it more when he comes home.
And yes, because he's away.
Yeah, he's away right now. So that's also a reason why I can't leave just at the minute.
Which must be difficult for you, though.
Yeah, it is in that, you know, we're both really supportive of each other. So when I did Carousel, I was doing 8 shows a week. So, you know, Andrew became super daddy. And now he's doing his big project. And, you know, I want to support him as much as I can. And that's really because... We always feel like being two artists, so we're not ever competing against each other, which is great, but we're really supportive of each other.
Now, you mentioned Carousel. Obviously, one of the things that has sort of dogged you, I guess, Catherine, over the course of your career is this reputation that you have for being a diva behind the scenes. And actually, I mean, I've known you now, what, for close to a decade, it must have been.
Easily.
And you're adorable. And I've seen you behind the scenes many, many times. And put it this way, you can only talk from your own experience, but, you know, I was with you behind the scenes at Dancing with the Stars in America, where everyone absolutely adored you. I've obviously seen you at work over here. But this reputation has sort of stuck with you. Now, I'm not going to say haunted you, because part of me thinks, actually, we've got room to have some divas in this showbiz world, because it's work for Mariah, you know. But before we come to the specifics, tell me how you feel overall about the fact that is something that has stuck.
It is funny, isn't it? It's sort of, I don't know if it's because of the type of music that I sing that people expect, or they sort of want that larger-than-life character, and they want to imagine that you're a diva. And things, I've read such crazy things about myself, where I've ordered, you know, 6 vegetarian meals at half an hour intervals and all this kind of stuff that I'm just like, where did that come from? That I think often I almost find myself sort of having to go the other way just to really prove to people that actually I'm not like that. This is who I am. This is, you know, as this, what you see is what you get.
Which must be frustrating though as well, because if you're someone that's in control of your own career, as you always have been, you do have certain standards that you have to adhere to.
Yeah. And you know, I think we're all doing jobs, and we all have got moving parts to that thing. And so when people come to see me in concert, I want it to be the best performance that I can give them. And so there's a quality control that, you know, but I find it so amusing sometimes how it can be, and upsetting actually sometimes, because it can be so far from the person that you actually are.
Do you ever just think, I'm going to embrace this? People think I'm a diva, so I'll show them what diva really means.
But then
I think that sometimes about myself, Catherine. People think this about me, so I'm just going to play up to it.
Sometimes I do, but then I might do an Instagram or a post or something where I'll like write something really diva-ish, and then people just don't get it, and they think I'm serious. So then it sort of goes, it adds fuel to the fire.
Now, Catherine, it's time for you to choose between your own songs. So this is Shuffle, Delete, Repeat. I'm going to give you three choices.
Okay.
And we're going to span your career here. So we go right back for choice one to 2005, taken from the number one album, Second Nature, your version of Time to Say Goodbye.
Time to
Then song two is Green, Green Grass of Home, taken from your number one selling album, Serenade, from 2006.
It's good to touch the green, green grass of home.
And then your last choice, more contemporary, Bring Me to Life, from 2009, which was, of course, taken from another number one selling album, Believe. So from those three choices, Catherine, which would you shuffle, which would you delete, and which would you repeat?
Oh, that is... Okay, I would delete Green, Green Grass of Home.
Yes.
Purely why? Because there's already an amazing version of Tom Jones out there in the world. So
you're
it's
happy
okay.
With that one.
You know, I'm at peace with it being Tom Jones's version out there. That I love that one. I would shuffle Bring Me to Life. Because I would have to keep Time to Say Goodbye. It's just been a song that's been so important for me. And it's the one song that if I don't sing it in a concert, I get complaints because it means something to a lot of people.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
And then obviously there were reports that emerged last year when you were starring in Carousel, which was a big musical. It was at the Coliseum in London, and you were starring alongside Alfie Beau.
Yes.
And there was all this debate over who was the leading role in that musical, because people were saying Alfie Beau's character was maybe considered the leading character, but in fact you got the best dressing room at the Coliseum, which apparently he wasn't happy about.
Well, I mean, the thing is, when you're doing a show like that, and it's, you know, as I said, 8 shows a week, it's really intensive. For me, all I wanted to do was just do a good job. And having a little one at home took so much time to just keep my voice going, keep my energy levels up, deliver the 8 shows a week, which I'd never done before. That honestly, all the other stuff that was being reported, it, again, for me, was just quite shocking. I had an amazing time. I made incredible friends with all the 71 cast members that we had. And so, yeah, the stuff about there being a feud, no feud from my side, absolutely no feud from my side.
But then this week, there were reports that you had gone to a signing at HMV in Manchester.
Yeah.
And staff had told you about the fact that there was a picture of your face, which had apparently been defaced by Alfie Beau. And he had written the C word on your face, which is obviously a really disgusting word. How shocked were you by that? And what was your reaction to what happened?
I wish I could say that bit isn't true.
Mm.
But I can't. And I also just sort of feel like we shouldn't give, you know, bullies a voice. Mm. And I'm a big girl. Mm. it's okay. Do you know, it's like, it's a really hectic time with the babies and the album, and I just don't want anything to spoil that. Mm. I want to just sort of enjoy the moment and not think about something like that, which obviously was very upsetting.
Would you confront him about it? Have you been in contact with him?
Nope. It's, you know, I'm not really sure what there is to be said about it. So, as I said, from my point of view, there's no issue. There's no feud. I haven't got time for it.
And do you have any idea why he would feel that strongly?
I mean, I think you'd have to ask him, because I think that word in any... It's a really strong word.
But you are a sensitive person, though, aren't you?
I am.
That's what maybe people don't see about you. Because, again, I've seen it behind the scenes. You are someone who can be really, really affected by things that people say about you. Yeah. And also, you're very emotional.
I'm a typical Cancerian.
Yeah.
So I am, you know, strong outer shell, and I'm really soft on the inside. Mm. So, yeah, I don't like confrontation. I don't like to argue with anybody. I don't argue with anybody. I don't fall out with people. So I'll do anything to avoid that kind of thing. So this is really something that's out of character in my life. I don't experience this kind of thing.
But maybe people don't necessarily see that in a shell.
Yeah, I'm sure. I think that when you're a female in this kind of world, you've sort of got to put your best foot forward and go out. And like we've talked about, people writing or, you know, making out that you're a diva or that kind of thing. So, you know, you put on your sort of smile and you go out and you do your best. But yeah, I'm definitely a sensitive one, and I don't like any of that.
Well, I was going to ask you actually if you did think there was any sexism attached, not specifically to the incident with Alfie Beau, but just overall, because it does feel like maybe not that many men are referred to as divas. They might be referred to as people who are bolshy and in control.
Yeah.
Whereas maybe you will be labelled a different way.
Yeah, that is something which I definitely think needs to be addressed. My counterparts, you know, in classical music, that if the men are away touring or working or whatever it is, then they're talented. Mm. And if a female is doing it who's, you know, a mum or just, you know, as I was 10 years ago, just a single girl going out and going on tour, you're, you know, ambitious. And that's a negative as well. And so it is interesting how we sort of view men and women in any workplace. I think that applies to all forms of careers, not just performers.
And obviously there has been a real change, though, happening in the industry over the past year with the Me Too and Time's Up movements.
Yeah.
You say that you have been affected directly by those movements. Can you explain in what way?
The things that happened that didn't happen within the classical music world. It was in other parts of media. And I didn't want to talk about it because I sort of felt actually when Me Too happened, and everybody was coming forward, I just literally had Xander.
Mm.
And it was sort of, I was in the bubble of that, and I didn't want any of the attention on that kind of thing. But I think we've all in, you know, the people that I, you know, that I work with, my friends, it doesn't really matter what industry you're in. People experience something like this along, and it's not right. It's not, and also men or women. I think that's the other thing, is it's obviously being focused on women at the moment, but it's everybody.
So how did you deal with it?
Just get on with it, don't you? I mean, that's sort of my attitude with a lot of things is, you know, I'm Welsh and we sort of just get on with it and process it at some point. And yeah, it you know, it wasn't a terrible, terrible one. Okay. It's just, I can identify with what some of the people were sharing.
Mm. I guess these experiences can manifest themselves in lots of different ways, can't they? Because I think people are learning much more now about the fact that actually it's that coercive control thing, or it's maybe what someone says to you or an implication sometimes that can be made, which, yeah, could affect a man, definitely. But on the whole, it seems that it is women who are mainly affected, especially given the fact that so many of the people that run the media industry or the entertainment industry are older men.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm actually grateful that the situation I was in, I didn't actually need that person. I was already having my career. So I already felt very strong and empowered and on my own path.
So you were able to cut him out of your life.
Yes. And I didn't need that person. But that's why I can understand how, for somebody maybe who's just starting, who doesn't know the industry or things like that, that must have been really intimidating. So I'm thankful that I was a little bit older and more situated, and you know, I knew how to handle it.
But is he someone you still have to encounter today?
No. So that's good. Yes. Yeah. Thank goodness.
Absolutely.
Firsts.
So Catherine, your first job
was working in Safeway supermarket on the tills.
Love that. First concert you went to?
I think I went to see an opera in the park in my teens. I think it was Madame Butterfly.
Appropriate. First time you were starstruck?
When I met Kylie Minogue backstage at the X Factor final when I was singing with Rydian, and I was a huge Kylie fan and still am, if I'm honest.
I feel that. So am I. The first thing you do in the morning?
Get up and go and feed my baby.
The first person you call when you need help?
My husband.
And the first time you realised you could sing?
I was 4, and I was singing Going Down the Garden to Eat Worms in the school talent show.
The last thing you did on a whim?
I haven't had much time for whims lately. Scooped everybody up after the first day of release of the album and said, come on, everybody, and took them all for fish and chips in Wales.
Love that. Last text message you received?
From my husband. He's working in Serbia for 4 months.
No.
Yeah, and he just said, good morning.
Oh, you must really miss him.
I am missing him.
It's very hard. Last song that you listened to?
Jess Glynn. All I Am, All I Have. That's the one that Aaliyah's loving.
Which your daughter loves. Last movie you saw?
Oh, I watched the Whitney documentary.
Oh, was it sad?
Have you not seen it?
I couldn't bring myself to watch it. Seriously, I'm such a fan of Whitney Houston. I could not bring myself to watch it. Is it worth watching?
It is worth watching. You learn more things as to maybe why she sort of spiraled.
I just think I was going to get angry because of the people around her who just didn't look after her.
Yeah, but I cannot get past that voice to me. Was a gift from God. There is no other voice like that.
No.
It was so incredible that I'm sort of really obsessed with sort of trying to work out why it went, you know, watching why it went wrong.
And last time you used public transport?
I took the train to Manchester for a signing, a HMV. So it was quicker to take the train.
Now, of course, on this podcast, we go through people's lives, really. We like to dig a little bit deeper. And your life, Catherine, has obviously been so fascinating, partly because of how in the spotlight it has been right from the early days. And I wonder if you have any regrets looking back about how much you chose to share. Because, of course, there was that famous interview, wasn't there, in 2008, where you spoke about the fact that as a university student you had taken drugs, which, to be honest, now, 10 years on, is a much smaller revelation, I think, than what it would have been 10 years ago. I think maybe society is a lot less shocked now.
Yeah.
But for a while it was something that dogged you, I guess. Or were you happy to just be honest?
No, I felt like I had to be honest. I think that was the thing. It was, I look back and I think it was the right thing to do. And I definitely don't regret talking about it. I regret the actual, that happened in my life. But I don't regret talking about it because I think it was something that needed to be addressed. It's interesting because, again, that's one of those things that kind of was, you know, bigged up more than it actually was. You know, I remember being in America, and somebody had read it or whatever, and they asked me, so where did you go to rehab? It wasn't.
So it's like you experimented like a lot of people do at university.
And not that much. But anyway, I mean, that is what it is, and I was happy I talked about it. With the other stuff, in terms of talking about my personal life, I'm actually really happy that I set a line in the sand to myself on day one. So, you know, I'm open to chatting about most things, but if it comes to sort of like, you know, photos of my wedding or photos of my children, things like that, you know, I'm really fiercely private about stuff like that. So, you know, we won't ever be doing a reality show. That stuff I want to keep personal until my children can tell me, actually, Mummy, I'd like to go to a red carpet thing. Then that's fine, but she has to ask me for that. So I'm glad that I had that sense back at 23 to know that I had to keep something for myself.
And what about social media with the kids and that type of thing?
So they're on, I occasionally share photos of them, but they always have their backs to the camera. And like I said, I think it has to be a conversation that we have.
And it is it's a decision that other celebrities have gone a different way on. Not everyone does do that.
But that's fine. That's totally fine. And I'm not judging. It's just that for me,
that's a choice.
I don't want to throw them into the spotlight. It's, you know, my family are all really normal people. And we don't have anybody that's sort of show business in my family. And
right, I've met your mum. I've met your auntie.
Mum and auntie.
They're adorable. Great fun.
And, you know,
But you do come from a very normal background.
Yeah. And so my children might stay in that background. And so I think it's important to
give them that opportunity.
Yeah,
absolutely. I think, again, it's one of these big moral debates that people have to make a choice on.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's a choice, I guess, that some might come to regret if they go the other way. But you can never know. And I guess parents have to do what feels right for them.
Yeah. And you know, as you can see, I'm so obsessed with my children and I'm very proud of them. I'd love to show everybody on social media all the cute things that they do, but I have to protect them for the time being.
Yeah, and some parents I know who aren't famous at all won't even put a picture of their child up on Facebook.
Yeah.
But I think that's sad when you get to that point as a society. But I do understand why, if you're in the public eye, you're opening your kids up to something that's potentially not going to be good for them in the future, which is why people are so careful.
Yeah.
And then, of course, relationships too. Catherine, you've had to live through breakups, makeups in the public eye.
Yeah.
And again, maybe because you, for quite some time, decided not to be open about that aspect of your life, there were some misconceptions, weren't there? Because actually, I remember when I came to see you in America during Dancing with the Stars, and you'd broken up with Gethin Jones, who was your fiance. Most people thought that you were the one who was maybe coping and had made that decision, whereas in fact, you were quite devastated, weren't you?
Yeah, I think everybody thought it was my choice. And then, so when Dancing with the Stars happened, it was actually, they asked me to go on it 2 weeks before. And I was like, yeah, that's exactly what I need in my life. I'm going to go to LA and I'm going to, wrongly thought I would see some sunshine and do some shopping. But all I saw was the inside of the dance studios, you know.
Yeah.
And it came at the right time because I really did need something to sort of put me back together. It was a really, you know, sort of sad time. But thankfully the show came and, you know, and everything changed.
And what's so interesting, right, is that you were partnered with Mark Ballas.
Yes.
Who, of course, we now know his mum.
Yes.
Shirley.
And she's a very good friend of yours.
Well,
now.
She is. But what's so strange, Catherine, is the first time I met her was behind the scenes at Strictly Come Dancing with you.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry, at Dancing with the Stars, with you. I'll say that again. The first time I met her was actually behind the scenes at Dancing with the Stars with you, because she was very involved in that show when her son was a pro dancer, right? Because I guess, to put it into context for people in the UK, Mark Ballas was a bit like Brendan Cole. He was one of the big stars of that show.
Yes. And, you know, Shirley, back then, you know, she was so highly respected as a dance, you know, sort of tutor and, you know, professional teacher and everything. So of course she would be, you know, watching over the rehearsals or whatever, not the ones where we would be in the, you know, in the studio, but actually like the dress rehearsals and stuff. And she was amazing. She was massively supportive and encouraging with me. You know, I got to know the whole family very well, and they're all amazing. And I think she's doing so great on the show. You know, I knew as soon as it got announced, I thought that is perfect casting, because Shirley really knows what she, you know, she's tough, but she comes at it from such a technical point of view that it's really helpful. And it's helpful for the audience, I think, to watch it. It's really interesting what she says.
Can you believe, though, that all of a sudden she's become one of the biggest stars in the country?
It's amazing. No, it is funny because, you know, I knew, but she always had a thing about her. You know, she's very strong and lovely woman. So, you know, she deserves that.
And of course, again, another big passion project for you is grief and how you deal with grief. And I know you're a patron for charities that you're very passionate about. And all of this, Catherine, stems for what was, of course, the most devastating moment of your life when you lost your dad, Selwyn. I think you were just a teenager, weren't you?
Yeah, 15. Yeah.
So that's a life changer, because at 15 years old, you know, you're not fully developed as an adult to go through something like that. So do you think that's maybe why, when you entered the industry, you'd grown up so fast? And a lot of people always used to say, well, you're so mature for your age. And I wonder if it's because you had to go through something like that.
I definitely think it has something to do with that. So Dad passed when I was 15 and my sister was 13. And we were given 6 months to live for him, but he actually went in under two. And I remember...
So there's not even really time to
get
process.
Your head around it. I actually didn't even get to say goodbye, because... They, you know, when you're little and you're, you know, 15, they say 6 months. I took it as I got 6 months for my dad. And I remember my aunt coming to biology class and saying, you need to come with us to the hospital because Dad's gone into a coma, which is why I didn't get to say goodbye. And so I've been working a lot with a charity called Grief Encounter, which is specifically for helping children who've lost a parent or a sibling. And I was really lucky because it took me a few months. After Dad died, I was having nightmares and I wasn't processing the grief, because actually 2 weeks after he died, I had my GCSEs. So I threw myself into that and didn't deal with it and started having these terrible nightmares, and I met a grief counsellor who helped me through it. Mm. But, you know, some people aren't lucky enough to meet people who could help them. And also you don't often want to talk to, you know, the other people in the household, because you don't want to make them upset again. So you're all protecting each other. So Grief Encounter is really good for taking the children outside of the house and getting them to be with other children who've lost a parent or a sibling, and getting them to come out the other side of it. So I just did a masterclass with them, with the Grief Encounter Choir, which was one of the most incredible afternoons. We all sang one of my songs called Jealous of the Angels together, and I taught them and did all these exercises and stuff. And afterwards we held a candle and we remembered who we were singing for. And some of these children have lost family in Grenfell. Little three-year-olds up to 10 or 12. And I kept it together in the room. And when I got home, I sobbed my heart out. I'm going to get upset even thinking about it now, because you can't help but think about your own child and how these little ones are. And I said to them, my dad's always in my thoughts. And I had this happen to me, like it's happened to you, but you can use this in a positive. And, you know, we can all work together and you can come out of this the other side and do good things with your life.
And I mean, do you look, another thing I guess that has changed recently is people are being much more open about the need for therapy and for counseling and for working on your mind as much as your body. Does that grief ever go, or do you still need grief counseling potentially for years, decades on? Because I know from my point of view, I've never lost a very, very close immediate relative, and I think it would be something that you probably would never be able to entirely process.
I think it was processing it in the beginning, you know, dealing firstly with the shock and, you know, the initial feelings of grief. And then I think it's just all about time. And I think it's, you know, it is that saying, time is a healer, and you go through the 10-year anniversary and the 20-year anniversary and suddenly it's all real again. But I felt like for me it was just something I needed within the first year.
So you haven't had to seek ongoing therapy?
No, but maybe that was a sign of the counsellor and that she did a good job.
Yeah.
In the first instance.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, it's a really important cause. And how can people find out more about grief
they can go to the Grief Encounter website, and I just think it is, you know, if you know a child who's had a bereavement, it really is a good thing to sort of suggest contacting the charity, because I've seen how it can transform these children's lives.
And of course you do a lot of this work for charity, Catherine. You always have, some of it below the radar, some of it above the radar. But again, when it very, very much became above the radar, and it's been one of those stories that people have talked about with you for many years, was because of some criticism you received from David Beckham over this work. This was when one of his emails was publicly leaked, where he said, "Catherine Jenkins, OBE for what? Singing at the rugby and going to see the troops, plus taking coke." Obviously, it's quite a shocking statement. You must have been shocked when this story came out.
I was in New York, and I was just having, like, I'd taken a week off, I think, and I was just having family time. And I was, you know, visiting relatives, and suddenly, you know, and you're just minding your own business, and you just get caught up in this, like, massive storm, and you just think, oh, I wasn't doing anything. Anyway, yes. To get caught up in that wasn't pleasant. I don't know why, again, that was aimed at me. I'm proud of my charity work. That's all I can say, is when I got the OBE. And I also don't feel the need to defend this, by the way. But
no, and you shouldn't have to.
No, in that I know what I've done. And when I got the OBE, it was given to me for music and for charity. And that's okay.
It's, I mean, you
know, I know.
Were you angry that he would think that? Were you upset?
I think it's just, you know, it's obviously disappointing to get caught up in something like that. And I don't know why, again, that would happen. But I've never heard anything from, you know, from them about it.
So he hasn't apologised to you?
No.
And you never reached out to him to ask what's going on?
No. Honestly, Dan, it doesn't matter. It's priorities, as we talked about. My priorities are my kids, my family, my singing, my charities, and that's just, you know, white noise in the background.
But it is weird, though, isn't it? Because you had previously had to deny these constant internet rumours that you had some type of relationship or affair with David Beckham as well. So it is a weird thing that you've had these two moments with him.
I know.
That actually don't involve even meeting him.
Yeah, it was one of those. No, I have met him. I've met him before. But yeah, it was one of those things. That's the negative of social media, is that something can be written that's not true, and it's like Chinese whispers. And suddenly, you know, anyway, it's past. It's a long time ago. I'm happy it's a long time ago. But it's not. When I look back over the last 15 years, those aren't the things that stand out to me. It's the good stuff.
No, and they shouldn't be. They shouldn't be, because you obviously have had this incredible career as much as anything else, haven't you? But it is fascinating to see, I guess, that softer side of you coming out now publicly, because, as I say, I guess I've always seen it behind the scenes, but I think now people can see it more from you, because you do have a family, and that does become the most important thing.
Yeah. I do think, you know, being a mum now has chilled me out. It's definitely softened me.
Love for your own mum.
Yeah.
That's obviously been a very important part of your life too.
And I think that's why probably the music of the album is more, it's not, this album wasn't about, oh, let's see how loud I can sing and all the high notes I can hit. It was, what emotional music do you want to sing from your heart? What touches you that you can hopefully pass on to the person listening to it?
Well, it is. It's one of the most beautiful and emotional albums I've heard in such a long time. Peace in the Valley's got me. It just absolutely got me. It's now one of my favourite sort of Christmas, sad, festive type songs. And, of course, Guiding Light is available now.
Now. I know.
Wherever you get your music, because that's another thing that has changed, Catherine, isn't
it? Totally has changed, yeah, from the first album to, it was all physical copies for the first album, and now so much has changed.
But it's still a good Christmas present.
Oh.
Still a good Christmas present. What are your plans for Christmas, by the way? I need to ask before
well,
we go.
We're still working it out. We're so disorganised this year because, obviously, with Andrew being away and having the album.
Do you go back to Wales, usually, or do you go to New York?
We're going to go back to Wales for a little bit, and we're probably going to stay in London for a bit as well. So we'll do both, and we'll have the Welsh lot with us. And I'll probably cook. Which I look forward to having a little glass of champagne while I cook. I like cooking. Andrew's better than me. I've been demoted since I got married. But we'll do it together probably.
And, so did you do the whole traditional thing?
Yeah, and I just did Thanksgiving. So
because you know, you've got to now as an American wife.
As an American wife in London, I had to cook up the Thanksgiving feast, which was a good because it's basically Christmas dinner. So I was able to just do a practice run for Thanksgiving, ready for Christmas Day.
Well, Catherine, it has been an absolute pleasure, as always, looking back at your incredible 15 years in the spotlight today. And of course, there are loads more podcasts just like this in our back catalogue. If you subscribe to the Dan Wharton Interview, wherever you listen to podcasts, it might be iTunes or Spotify or Apple Podcasts, you can find all of our previous interviews from the likes of Ed Sheeran, Sam Smith, The Spice Girls, of course, very recently. So just download all of those totally for free if you want to. Or if you subscribe, you'll also get our next interview as soon as it's available. But of course, on the podcast recently, we had Anne-Marie, one of the rising stars of British pop, who opened up all about her battles with mental health. And we had a huge amount of feedback to this interview. Jessica Renwick, she wrote in to say, listening to the Dan Wharton podcast with Anne-Marie and hearing she has mental health problems makes me feel at ease with myself that I'm not on my own. It's okay not to be okay, which is such a brilliant message. And S on Twitter also wrote in to say, listen to the full podcast and all I want to do is cuddle Anne-Marie. You're so brave and so smart and kind and beautiful inside and out. You don't deserve all the mental health issues at all. And just know you have an army behind you. We love you. And that is such a great message. Of course, that podcast is available too. It's been such a pleasure to be here with Catherine Jenkins today with a little guest appearance from Xander.
Oh, well, thank you for having us both.
It's been an absolute joy. And of course, we'll be back very soon.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.